I can't believe you asked me that.
You know what I mean?
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Carla Wells Brandon. You guys got your bunny slippers on? Because you better hurry, because you're about to take a walk to the other side, and bunny slippers are required. Now, you guys can be barefoot if you want. It's okay. Tennies, toe rings, sandals. I'm in a good mood tonight. I'm up here in the mountains. It's cool. The fireflies are out. But I'm going to tell you something. Is the world becoming a scary place or what? With the Middle East lighting up like an out-of-control bonfire, and the Republicans and the Democrats at each other like school children in a pissing contest, and with the bombs going off on trains in India, I'm beginning to wonder about the function of the human mind. I just sent off emails to my cousins and to friends of mine in Haifa, Israel. Right now, they're getting bombed to pieces over there. Everybody's in their bomb shelter. I know what they're doing. They're all down there in their bomb shelters. They're reading books and listening to music and talking to each other, and I hope everybody stays safe. It's all morning over there, so just hang in there. I need to tell all of you people that I work very hard when world events like this happen at staying balanced. With family living in Israel and having Scud missiles dropped in their front yard and having patients and family in New York during the World Trade Center situation and another one in Washington, D.C. When the Pentagon was bombed, I have to just really work at it. So if you're feeling overwhelmed with the recent world events, let me share with you just how I stay balanced. First of all, gang, I know I am powerless over the politicians. I am powerless over governments. I am powerless over terrorists. And I am powerless over world crises. Now, that may sound kind of strange, but it sets me free. Understanding that I am powerless allows me the freedom to look at these situations from a more spiritual and personal perspective. I don't have to get so twisted up. From a spiritual perspective, I can pray, and I can pray that the wisdom of the universe and the beyond nudges our civilization as a whole with right action and thought to do what is healthy and healing for humanity at large. Now, on a personal level, I tend to get real focused at times like this on what's right in front of me. How are these world events impacting my children? Do I need to check up on them? See how they are feeling. Do we need to have little talks? When 9/11 happened, both of my boys needed attending to. One of them was persecuted for being Jewish and basically told that the reason why 9/11 happened was because of the Jews. He needed my attention. They didn't need me running around like a chicken with my head cut off. What is my emotional IQ? Am I getting overly distraught over situations which are out of my control? Am I too angry, or am I sinking into depression? Am I feeling hopeless? And if there are things that I can do, like as in my case, you know, I can support my friends and relatives in Israel. I can contribute financially to charity organizations that support victims of war. There are things that I can do. Now, dysfunctional things are being glued to that damn television set with all those news channels with the screaming politicians, alone in my house with me sitting there becoming more and more upset. That's not a good thing. So if there are those of you out there who have been glued to the television set all day long, turn the damn thing off now. Take your own emotional IQ. Get support from like-minded friends and educate yourself on the world events of the day, but turn off the television, the radio news stations, and put the newspapers down if you become too overwhelmed. Too many people become paralyzed. They become paralyzed with fear. Speaking of overwhelmed, gang, 2 weeks ago there was a little weather up here in the mountains, and this left the last show feeling a bit spacey. I thought it was spacey. my computer kept crashing, and since we were reviewing an article from the Skeptical Inquirer magazine, which was dissecting many of my examples of deathbed visions, a crashing computer was not a good thing. The base of our last program was this. There are skeptics out there who just don't do their homework. These people are, for the most part, now listen to this, atheists, and they appear to be willing to go to any lengths to distort the investigations of those of us who research afterlife experiences. Because of such individuals, experiencers are having a real difficult time sharing their encounters, and researchers like myself are finding it really hard to get the message out. In the following case from aboutparanormal.com, if you haven't been to that site, y'all need to go check it out, you will see just what I mean. Quote, my mother recently spent several days in the hospital. While there, she was in a room with two other women, one of whom was terminal. Mom says that the room was filled with people she could see only reflected in the windows at night or on the metal surfaces of equipment or when she closed her eyes. So what she was doing is she was having visions of lots of people in the room. She says she particularly remembers a young girl in a white dress that danced and danced and a beautiful young woman, again in white, who kept going over to the dying woman, looking down at her, and then walking away. One man with long white hair was the only one who seemed to notice Mom. He even walked around to get a better look, whereupon my mom looked away from him. So this woman is seeing people in this room that other people aren't seeing. The woman pulled through whatever crisis brought her there. This is the terminal woman. As she got better, Mom says the crowd shrank until no one was there by the time Mom was discharged. As a semi-humorous side note, Mom says she mentioned these other people to a nurse only once. The nurse immediately went into brain injury / stroke mode. What is your name? Where do you live? What year is this? And the like. Now, this is not uncommon when patients or people who are near death begin describing afterlife experiences. Mom says she got out of that by pointing out how the equipment reflected in the windows at night made a big face here and a big face there until the nurse was satisfied. So the woman, she lied. She decided, you know, this nurse, she's not going to listen to me. I'm not going to tell her the truth. And then she took care not to tell any of the other nurses, doctors, and so forth about the other people in the room. That's what lots of folks do in hospitals when they have these experiences. The woman who seemed to be the center of the spirit's attention was apparently terminal, just not dead yet. Mom said the doctor came in one morning and scolded the woman about not having a living will. Can you imagine? You're like feeling like, wow, you don't know if you're going to be stepping out of the shell of the self and moving on to the afterlife and somebody's screaming at you about a living will. Apparently her daughters had had her resuscitated when he felt it would have been better to just let her go. Property dispute. You can always tell the health of a family by how everybody reacts when somebody's getting ready to die. Anyway, this was submitted by somebody who uses the pen name of Moon Glory. The doctor in this situation was not very supportive of the woman who was dying, and the nurse immediately suspected the mother of the individual who had shared this experience that we are now going over was having a stroke. Why are the skeptics so mistrusting and dismissing of those of us who have experienced deathbed visions, out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, and after-death communication? And though they call themselves educated, no-nonsense skeptics, are they really skeptics, or have such individuals created a religion of skepticism which is as rigid as that of a flaming fundamentalist? Well, according to a PhD astronomy professor who is also a host of UFOskeptic.org website, his definition of a skeptic is, and I love this definition, one who practices the method of suspended judgment. Suspended. Engages in rational and dispassionate reasoning as exemplified by the scientific method, shows willingness to consider alternative explanations without prejudice, based on prior beliefs, and who seeks out evidence and carefully scrutinizes its validity. So what this guy is saying basically is, you know, a true skeptic is someone who goes in with an open mind. The skeptics we're seeing today are not operating with an open mind. Sir William Bennett, the godfather of deathbed vision research, has documented a number of turn of the last century cases. And I included several of these cases in my books, One Last Hug Before I Go and A Glimpse of Heaven. Now, during the last show, where we had weather interference, I shared with you how a writer for the Skeptical Inquirer had dissed the account, one of my accounts, without really looking into it. Believe it or not, it was an account that I had gotten from Dr. Barrett. And Dr. Barrett was, at one time, a true skeptic, an open-minded skeptic. Listen to this account, a powerful after-death communication. And it was actually published in the Scientific Journal way, way, way back in 1908. A gentleman of some sort shot himself in London in the spring of 1907. Huh, that's when my family left Russia and came here. There can be little doubt that his mind was unhinged at the time by the recent sips of that morning of a letter from a lady that blighted all his hopes. So the guy, he was depressed. Some woman, you know, told him to take a hike. So he shot himself. Before taking his life, he scribbled a memorandum leaving an annuity to my young friend, who was his godchild. So this is the godchild of the person of Barrett. Not of Barrett, no. This is the godchild of the man who shot himself, and the person writing this was this godchild's friend, and to whom he was greatly attached. 3 days afterwards, on the day of his funeral, he appeared to this godchild. Okay, so the guy who shot himself, gang, what he did is after he had passed, his godchild had an after-death communication with him. The guy appeared as an apparition who stated, he appeared to this godchild who, as stated, was being educated in a convent school on the continent, informing her of the fact of his sudden death. So this godchild did not know that the godfather had killed himself. No awareness. But here comes the godfather to the godchild across the continent to share, look, you know, I'm not here anymore. I killed myself. And he discussed the manner of his sudden death and of the cause which had led him to take his life, and asking her to pray for him. The mother, anxious to conceal from her daughter the distressing circumstances of her godfather's death, waited to write until a few days after the funeral, and then only stated that her uncle, as he was called, had suddenly died. Subsequently, upon meeting her daughter on her return from the continent, the mother was amazed to hear not only of the apparition, but that it had communicated to her daughter all of the circumstances which she had never intended her daughter to know. So the mother never planned on telling the daughter, look, you know, your godfather, he shot himself. He was in love, he was distressed, he was depressed, he shot himself. Careful inquiry shows that it was impossible for the information to have reached her daughter through more normal means. Miss Charlton, who kindly went to the convent to make inquiries into this case, states that the girls in the convent never see any newspapers, all letters are supervised, and no one in the convent seems to have known of the deceased gentleman. Hence, that any knowledge of her godfather's suicide or of the reason for it could have reached her by ordinary channels cannot be entertained for a moment. The mother, who is a personal friend of mine, assured me that neither she nor any of her relatives, had they known of the suicide, which they did not, wrote to the convent on the matter, except as narrated above. Now, unlike the men and women of Barrett's time, most modern skeptics believe that individuals such as myself are just New Age freaks who suffer from a great deal of wishful thinking and delusion. If they took the time to really investigate us, they would learn that many of us were at one time just as skeptical as they are, or I should say, close-minded, As I said, Sir Barrett was a hard-nosed skeptic, but his years of research showed him his skepticism was not founded on fact. Well, gang, here is another one-time skeptic. This is a modern-day skeptic who, interestingly, had an open mind. George Hansen was professionally employed in parapsychology laboratories for 8 years, 3 at the Rhine Research Center in Durham, North Carolina, and 5 at the Psychophysical Research Laboratories in Princeton, New Jersey. Princeton, New Jersey, not Flakesville, USA. Because he understands the mind of the skeptic, he decided to research those involved with the Skeptical Inquirer magazine in depth. Let's look at the results of his investigation. Now, this article comes from the Journal of the American Society for Psychical Research. They're a great group. This organization is full of scientifically minded individuals who research the paranormal, and this is out of the January 1992 issue. In the last 15 years, writes George Hansen, the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, PSYCOP, has become a major force in the debate on the paranormal. It has generated considerable attention, not only in the popular media, but also in scientific forums. The readership of its magazine, The Skeptical Inquirer, has grown to over 35,000 subscribers in 62 countries. Well, at least I got a lot of exposure with my article that they did. There are several reasons PSYCOP has flourished. Much of the organization's success can be attributed to the dynamic leadership of philosopher Paul Kuntz and the publicity skills of magician James Randi. You guys, I know you have seen this guy on TV. We'll talk more about him in a second. And the wide influence of writer Martin Gardner. Although none of these three are scientists, okay, none of these three are scientists, they are the big wigs with the Skeptical Inquirer, which purports to be, gang, an investigative team of scientists who research paranormal activities in order to debunk them. But instead, no, high priority has been given to the media, and PSYCOP style is geared for a broad audience rather than for practicing scientists who study the paranormal. In fact, after the first 5 years, PSYCOP abandoned its own scientific research. So I want you to hear this now. The organization that is out there debunking the after-death communications and deathbed visions and near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences and premonitions that you are having are individuals who are not themselves scientists, who do no research. In examining the scientific status of PSYCOP, sociologists have described the committee as a scientific vigilante organization. One can almost smell the fiery autos da fe of the Spanish Inquisition, irrational rationalists, combative propagandists, the new Inquisition, the new disciples of scientism. PSYCOP can be regarded as the first case of ongoing organized debunking of the paranormal. Academic psychologists critiqued early psychical research and parapsychology. Interestingly, magicians have been involved with controversies on the paranormal for over 400 years, and they have written numerous books on the topics. One of the most prolific detractors of early psychic research, early 1900s, was a Catholic priest who became an atheist. You know what is so interesting? Is that the people who scream and yell the most about the paranormal are individuals who are atheists. They really just get themselves all whipped up into a frizzy. In the early 1970s, there was a tremendous upsurge of interest in the occult in the U.S. The occult, the new age, the dawning of the new age, you know, whatever you wanted to call it, dropping acid, tuning in, tuning out, meditation, TM, all that stuff. This occult explosion was not viewed favorably by many, and some academics perceived it as a signal to a rise of irrationality. So we were all getting very irrational. Nobody looked and said, well, you know, maybe people are just tired of organized religion. Paul Kuntz I can't ever pronounce his name right, a bigwig in PsyCops to this day, orchestrated a campaign against astrology. So these guys have been, you know, they've been up to debunking for a long time. In 1975, signatures from 186 scientists were collected for a manifesto titled Objections to Astrology. So instead of going and curing cancer, you know, examining physics, quantum physics, you have all 186 scientists who get their panties in a twist over astrology. The Skeptical Inquirer took on a more aggressive debunking tone. Cartoons and illustrations were later added, some of which poked fun at persons discussed in the article. Lee Nesbitt, remember that name. He's on television a lot. PsyCops executive director said, now listen to this, it's belief in the paranormal, a very dangerous phenomena, dangerous to science, dangerous to the basic fabric of our society. We feel it is the duty of the scientific community to show that these beliefs are utterly screwball. I like that word, screwball. Some people would say I'm a screwball. So who belongs to PsyCop? There are four major features that characterize PsyCop. Affect its choice of goals and determine its sphere of influence. Perhaps the single most important factor is the high education level of the membership. Many hold prominent positions with academia. Another aspect is that a disproportionate number of its members are magicians, and many of them were involved with parapsychological controversies long before the establishment of this organization. A third distinguishing feature is that the vast majority of PsyCop are male, and this has affected the tone and demeanor of the group. A final characteristic is the influence of religious convictions. A substantial portion of the members share similar views and are active in promoting them. And the main religious view is the religion of atheism. When prestigious people lend their names to an anti-paranormal crusade, a student who has interest might automatically presume that those persons are scientific authorities on the topic, and this is not the case, gang, because they don't research. The proportion of magicians in PsyCop is much higher than in the general population. Some of those who are no longer members of PsyCop are also well-known within magic societies. So with these people, you know, they get into some magic. They become kind of mediocre magicians. They need to make a name for themselves. They join PsyCop and start becoming debunkers. Many of the conjurers involved with PsyCop were involved with psychic topics long before the skeptical organization began. The high visibility of conjurers, magicians, and PsyCop has given many people the idea that most magicians hold skeptical views regarding psychical phenomena as unfounded. They're skeptical. Surprisingly, this impression is not correct. According to a 1989 poll, a group of magicians in California, 82% had a belief in ESP. According to a German poll, 72% believed Psy was probably real. Many prominent magicians have, in fact, endorsed psychic phenomena. But when these folks go on national TV and start talking about how because they are magicians and they know sleight of hand, that their rationale for the paranormal being a bunch of bunk, they come off sounding very credible, sadly. PsyCop is also heavily dominated by men, and until 1991, there were no women at all on the executive council. I love this description. The new scientist described PsyCop as white male and slightly geriatric. My kind of gang, that's who I want to hang out with. What an open-minded crowd. I am not saying all white geriatric men are closed-minded like the members of PsyCop. A few individuals in the national organization have expressed concern about the image projected by the local affiliates. Now, this is not only a national organization. They have pods out there, gang. They've got pods. They've got pods in every state in the United States. They've got pods in the major cities. They grow these pods and send them out there. When discussing PSYCOP and its popular debunking practices, words like frightening, fundamentalism, and witch hunting have been used by well-known paranormal researchers and some in the scientific community. One was quoted as saying, as a whole, parapsychologists are nice, honest people, while the critics are cynical and nasty. Why is that? Why can't they be, like, fun people in the process of debunking? Several organizations and informal religious channels link many PSYCOP fellows, consultants, and members of local groups with atheism. Paul Kuntz, the chairman of PSYCOP and a philosopher at the State University of New York at Buffalo, is active in pushing atheism. He is involved with a company that publishes such titles as The Atheist Debater's Handbook and Atheism, The Case Against God. Kearns's views on the paranormal are firmly linked to his views on religion. A member with the last name of Alcott, along with Kearns, has made several attempts to associate parapsychology with religion in order to discredit it as a science. Alcott's feelings toward religion and parapsychology were candidly revealed in his 1981 book, Parapsychology, Science or Magic, where he asserted in the Skeptical Inquirer the following. These guys are so intense. One is continually encountering priests who express dismay and perplexity at their flock's attraction for the other competing superstitions, give a fellow the tools for destroying his common sense, and occasionally he'll finish the job. Religion is the optimist's paranoia. So for all you folks who are, you know, if you're religious at all out there, you've just been called a paranoid. Another religiously perturbed individual and PSYCOP member, Martin Gardner, he's a bigwig, also acknowledged the influence of his religious beliefs on his current stand against parapsychology. He revealed that he once was a Protestant fundamentalist. Now, this is real common, you guys. Some of these atheists, they have history with fundamentalism or some sort of disappointment with religion. Apparently, his opposition to parapsychology is based in part on religious factors, for he has written, it is possible that paranormal forces not yet established may allow prayers to influence the material world. And I am certainly not saying this possibility should be ruled out. That's his attempt to be like, you know, a healthy skeptic. As for empirical tests of the power of God to answer prayer, I am among those atheists who, in the spirit of Jesus, okay, see, this is where I got twisted up. Power of God to answer prayer. I am one of those atheists who, in the spirit of Jesus, is that contradictory to anybody out there? Remark that only the faithless look for signs, consider such tests both futile and blasphemous. Let us not tempt God. So this atheist is telling us in the spirit of Jesus not to tempt God. Oh, that's rich. Okay. Gardner has also, he's the other PSYCOP big top guy. He has also gone after the religious views of professional researchers in parapsychology in order to destroy their reputations as scientists. So I guess, you know, if you have a religious background, you can't be a scientist at the same time. That's what these folks are saying. He has gone after editors, senior editors. 29 official members of PSYCOP have publicly identified themselves as holding atheist views. This is a remarkable number, and it has clearly influenced the organization. Much of the energy driving the controversy over the paranormal may derive from deeply held religious beliefs, atheism, and any attempt to understand the psychological factors underlying the psy controversy should consider these individuals' undealt with religious issues. Okay, now here's my favorite person. When I did Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher a number of years ago, I was supposed to appear with James Randi. And I went and researched this guy because he was going to come on and blast me. And so I always like to educate myself on my adversaries. James Randi can be seen regularly on Larry King Live. He comes on shows to debunk anything that has to do with paranormal activity. He has slam-dunked Uri Geller. He has slam-dunked John Edwards. He has slam-dunked Sylvia Brown. He has gone out of his way to go after anybody who is supportive of afterlife experiences. James Randi, one of the most visible PsyCop members, is not, I repeat, not a scientist. But he acts like one on the History Channel, Larry King Live, National Geographic Channel, and more. He has been professionally involved with magic since he was 18, and he has received moderate acclaim within that fraternity, so he's a mediocre magician. He tells how he publicly confronted phony spiritualists when he was a teenager. He has since enjoyed a colorful career. At one time, Randi published a phony astrology column, had a radio show of his own, was an escape artist, toured with rock star Alice Cooper, playing the role of executioner on stage, and took part in some archaeological exploits in South America with UFO buff James Mosley, who has admitted to grave robbing. Now, this is the type of guy I'm going to trust when it comes to debunking the paranormal. But the problem is the public doesn't know all this stuff. This information that I'm sharing with you, the public doesn't have a clue. Thanks to our good friend George Hansen, we all know what the real deal is. Randi is now the individual probably most widely identified with the skeptics movement. His magic experience helped generate considerable publicity. He has appeared on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show at least 32 times. Randi's association with PsyCop resulted in his receiving several major honors, one of which was the MacArthur Foundation giving him a genius award. A genius award. He tours with Alice Cooper, he becomes a genius, which carried a tax-free grant of $272,000. Now remember, this guy is not a scientist, nor has he ever conducted scientific research to disprove afterlife theories or paranormal investigations. Like other members of PsyCop, Randi has described himself as a devout atheist. He associates with like-minded groups and has made appearances at conventions of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. In 1990, he received a Humanist Distinguished Service Award, and the American Humanist Association was selling both audio and videotapes titled Honoring the Amazing Randi. Hey, gang, that's what he goes by, too. So, like, if you're watching TV and you hear a blurb, the Amazing Randi is going to be on such and such a show, Larry King Live, whatever, that's who this guy is. Martin Gardner has been aptly described as the godfather of the paranormal debunking movement, and his influence is pervasive. As mentioned previously, he is highly regarded as a conjurer, and he is a big deal in magician circles. He has contributed important works to magic. So this guy is like, you know, he's not a mediocre magician. In 1952, he published In the Name of Science, which has turned out to be a landmark skeptical work. The big shots aren't the only ones pushing each other aside to run down afterlife researchers, projects, and education. As I said, local PsyCop groups have been encouraged to protest university courses favorable to the paranormal. So you decide you want to take a class, you go to your local community college, you want to maybe study near-death experiences and the researchers. These guys are going to be there protesting and trying to get it taken out of the curriculum. The local groups follow a published article called Pseudoscience in the Name of the University, subtitled What Should Be Done About Extension Courses That Use the University's Prestige to Promote Pseudoscience. Well, basically what they're talking about, you know, anything that has to do with afterlife research. This piece decries the growing number of such courses affiliated with universities. These people are mad. This information is making its way into the universities, and they are mad. The efforts have been directed primarily toward non-credited courses and adult education programs. So these people are going to, like, put a ton of energy into going and dissing. You know, like, somebody wants to go take a class on ghost hunting or paranormal equipment for identifying whether or not a place is haunted, and these jokers are going to come in and pitch a fit. Other routes have been taken to promote skeptical views within academia. Some of the local groups offer debunking courses, lecture series, and workshops on how to debunk the paranormal. Others have awarded prizes for debunking essay are these people putting an awful lot of energy into this? It's like, what do they do? Do they have lives? Debunking essay contests and science fairs, and PsyCop has instituted a campus lecture series. In a 1986 editorial, another PsyCop big to-do, Kendrick Fraser discussed PsyCop broadening horizons. He indicated that the committee would revise its scope to include topics outside the paranormal, and gang, this has happened. And if you are not into the afterlife and you're not into looking into near-death experiences, after-death communications, deathbed visions, you need to hold on, because these folks, they're going after, they have decided they've kind of tapped this out a little bit, so they're going after outside areas. Some of the topics listed, which they will be investigating, were chiropractors, dream interpretation, and natural arthritis cures. They're also going after holistic health. They are debunking left and right holistic health, herbal remedies, nutritional supplementation. They're really, really going after this stuff. The cultural scene of the paranormal has been continually shifting, and PsyCop has had to slightly redefine its role. Well, actually, what's happening is it's gaining more acceptance slowly, and so PsyCop has to find new wells to dig. I know that James Randi went after some holistic health folk who were very into sharing with the public the benefits of holistic health. PsyCop also involves itself in the medical arena and has a paranormal health claims subcommittee. Recently, the Skeptical Inquirer has included a few articles addressing fringe areas of medicine. Two books have been published attacking holistic medicine. PsyCop has exerted enormous effort and mobilized considerable resources in its battle against the paranormal. Some of the leaders have devoted much of their professional careers to the cause. As I said, they don't have lives. Although recognizing the importance of the paranormal, PsyCop elected not to conduct scientific research, but rather it has undertaken an extended public relations campaign. So they're all about the media, gang. The committee actively attempts to influence the media, and it has complained to the FCC under the Fairness Doctrine. PsyCop seeks endorsements from scientific luminaries, despite the fact that few, if any, of these luminaries have ever published scientific research on the paranormal. So you'll have some guy, gal, who is very, very in their area, and their scientific arena is very well respected, but because of their own religious atheistic views, they will jump on the PsyCop bandwagon, and what they will do is they will lend their name to this organization. And so the public sees these names, and they believe, look, you see all these educated scientists, well, they must be researching this stuff, and so they know they're debunking. No, wrong, 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 so wrong. These activities display more parallels with political campaigns than with scientific endeavors. Many readers of the Scientific Inquirer magazine undoubtedly assume that PsyCop presents the best available scientific evidence. The readers are rarely told that the existence of scientific journals that cover parapsychology are out there, and they are, gang. My good buddy, Dr. Bruce Grayson, is the editor for the Journal of Near-Death Studies. I mentioned earlier another journal. I mean, if you want to know about individuals publishing in scientific journals, individuals exploring afterlife, paranormal activity, you email me at drsbrandon, drsbrandon, at sbcglobal.net, or go to my website at www.carlawillsbrandon.com. You email me. I'll give you a list of people who are scientifically investigating, who aren't just sitting around taking pot shots at people because they've got a beef of unresolved issues of their own. The effect of PSYCOP's activities is to create a climate of hostility toward the investigation of paranormal claims. Indeed, at one PSYCOP conference, the announcement of the closing of several parapsychology laboratories was greeted with cheers. Surveys show that over half the adult population in the U.S. have had psychic experiences and believe in the reality of the phenomenon, even if they are closeted. PSYCOP's activities will likely continue to inhibit scientific research on the paranormal. It's impossible. I cannot get money to do research because of folks like this. They are bent on keeping people like me and other researchers at bay. So what we do is we pay out of our own bank, you know, I pay out of the Bank of Carla to do what it is that I do. So, my take on PSYCOP, for years I have had a clinical practice, as most of you know. I am a clinician. I am an educated clinician, a university-educated clinician. In the 80s, in the late 80s, I was running around talking about trauma and PTSD, and I was seen as an expert in that field. So I'm no schmo. Well, my kids think I'm a schmo. The bulk of my clients are those who have experienced massive trauma, sexual assault, victims of war, violence, the Holocaust, and then there are those who are grieving over a death. It has been my experience, after 20 years of clinical practice and 9 published books, lecturing in the United States and in London at major hospitals, universities, and other clinical settings, that those who are extremely rigid in their thinking with regard to spiritual matters are operating out of their own unresolved history, as opposed to working through the anger, grief, hurt, and pain they carry deep within regarding their own unresolved life traumas. These emotions are projected onto a cause, okay? It's called displacement. This cause is a distraction to dealing with the core issues. The need to project this cause, this belief system, onto others becomes obsessive, and this is what the skeptic does, gang. So, somebody comes into my office, and I've had this happen before. They've got massive abuse history. They are raging at God. They are angry that they were abused, that God didn't whisk down and save them from their abuse, or somebody they love desperately died, and they're angry at God. They're angry at churches. They're angry at religious institutions. They're angry at anything that has anything to do with spirituality. And what they do is they take all of that anger and they focus it into some cause. They may focus it into a cause, oh, maybe it's a beneficial cause. Maybe they get into some charity work, or maybe they become members of PSYCOP. And take all of their anger to try to debunk anything that has to do with spirituality. It's a very, very common situation that I see all of the time. When one carts around with them unresolved old pain, they oftentimes seek out a philosophy of thinking, science or religion, which will provide them with canned solutions to the problems encountered in the living experience. That's real common, too. They want something concrete. So what they do is they go looking for something concrete, and scientific method becomes their god. Skepticism, unhealthy skepticism, becomes their god. Fowler, author of The Stages of Faith, that's a really good book, you guys. It's like a classic text that discusses how we evolve as spiritual beings. It doesn't, it doesn't push a religion. It doesn't push a way of thinking, but it actually psychologically goes through the process that you and I and anybody else goes through as we develop spirituality. And spirituality is not religion. Spirituality is that sense of connectedness we have with each other, with the sense of connectedness we have with the universe, Religion is man-made. Religion is just a stepping stone to personal spirituality. This is a really, really good book, and I usually have a lot of my patients read this. But anyway, this author discusses how attaching oneself to the strict limits of a particular form of thought prevents future growth. I believe such behavior serves a purpose. There are a lot of people, so somebody has had a loss. They've had a real loss. And what they do is they get into the skeptical way of thinking. And they become very, very angry. They become very angry with religion. They become very angry with spirituality. And what they do is they become involved with organizations that provide canned explanations. Okay, well, once we receive a canned explanation of something, are we open to exploring other alternatives if we just stick with that? So if somebody comes to me and says, Carla, the only way that you can deal with your Crohn's disease is by getting on massive doses of steroids, which will, in about 20 years, disintegrate your bones, and you'll have two hip replacements by the time you're 60. If I had just listened to that and said, okay, that's just the way it is, I never would have gone outside the box and taken a look at alternative medicine, herbal remedies, nutritional support, lifestyle change. I'm one of those very few people who has serious Crohn's disease, and I don't have to take medications, and I can, for the most part, keep it at bay. Once in a blue moon, I gotta, go do the hospital thing, but that's very, very rarely. I'm very, very lucky. What happens to a lot of people is they get stuck. They get very, very stuck. And once they are stuck and dependent on canned answers, they don't use their own creativity to go out and explore, to ask other questions. And I really, really do think that the cause, the rigidity, that the being stuck takes center stage. And it takes center stage not only on a personal level, but it ebbs out into other areas of our life. It's always important to crawl out of that damn box. Don't just take what is given to you at face value. If a part of you feels a little uncomfortable or not real clear, or if you've got some questions, or if your intuition is saying, I don't know about this, if your intuition is saying right now while you're listening to me, she's nuts. What she is saying doesn't make any sense to me at all. She's nuts. I think I'm going to go check this out. That's a good sign. That's a good sign. Go check it out. Check me out. Check Deathbed Visions out. Check the paranormal out. Check the Skeptical Inquirer out. That's a good thing. You never want to be boxed in. If I am pouring my life into defending a certain belief system, as the amazing Randy does, along with other rigid, linear-thinking individuals, not only in the U.S., but in Britain. Also, hey, gang, have you guys been to the Bible Belt? Have you come to my neck of the woods? You want to talk about rigidity? Are any of you Jewish? Have any of you experienced persecution for being a Jew, a Muslim, a Buddhist, New Ager, having green hair, pink nails, whatever, directing all of my anger and pain onto a cause. If I do this, if we do this, we never have to address any of our unresolved issues. I get people who come into the office all of the time. I mean, their plates are stacked. They're going through a divorce. Their kids are giving them holy hell. They've got problems at the job. Their parents are ill. They've got so much going on, and they're not dealing with any of it. They're not dealing with a thing because they have found one cause to pour all of their energy into. And it distracts them completely and totally from what is right in front of them and what it is they need to be taking a look at. I'll never forget Sylvia Brown. She was given the amazing Randy some grief about his physical health on Larry King Live. Her husband had called me. He knew that I had some information about the amazing Randy. because of the politically incorrect situation, which, by the way, the amazing Randy, he never showed up. Some other skeptic showed up. Actually, he was a really nice guy, too. But I'll never forget her talking to him about health issues, and he just wanted to get right back on to, I'm here to debunk you, and that's the way it is. But if I stick with a cause, I never have to address any of my tragedies, witnessing or participating in a war, being an abuse survivor, the death of a loved one. Focusing in on the cause day in and day out allows one to totally avoid the above unresolved issues. Many unresolved psychological issues involve anger towards spiritual principles, a concept of God or a higher power, spiritual tenets which discuss other world activity. Now, do you know that if you have abuse history, loss, trauma, drama, sadness, disappointment in your life, it's normal to get angry at God, concept of a higher power, the universe, why me, why me, why me? But that's part of the healing process. But if you get stuck there, you're in big trouble. If you ignore it, you're in big trouble. So if any of you out there are there, if you're feeling those feelings, go find somebody to talk to. Go find somebody who's going to let you rage and scream at God because your wife passed away or your girlfriend dumped you or that job you were so into isn't yours anymore or your kids are giving you a hard time. When the internal thought is, where was God when my abuse, hurt, loss was taking place, occurs, do something with it. Typically, this resides within the unconscious of those who are persistent in pounding on believers. Their anger is not at us. No, this is just a projection. Their anger goes deeper than that. We are just distractions to their internal pain. There's also an addiction to self-righteousness. Now, if you notice, these folks are very self-righteous, which shields such individuals from ever going within and exploring their old hurts. If these individuals were to accept or open up to other spiritual possibilities, they would be forced to examine themselves. That's too frightening, so they persist in their self-righteous battles against us to be right. For all of you who persist in doing battle with rigid skeptics, okay, here's my message to you. Understand you are spitting in the wind. The harder you push them, the more you badmouth them, the quicker they will be to cut you off at the kneecaps with their attempts to discredit you. I only go so far with skeptics, and then I'm done. After tonight, I'm done. You'll become their main distraction. When you have a message which regards an afterlife existence, you have, my friends, two choices. You can get all heated up over what the skeptics have said to you or done to you. You can get just as linear and as rigid as they are. You can go after them with everything you've got. You can put your life aside to try to prove to the universe, of course the universe already knows, but to try to prove that you are right and they are wrong, or what you can do, my friends, you can reach out to the individual who is open to your experience, strength, and hope. That's right, you guys. There are people out there who need to hear about your experiences. They need to know that this life isn't the only life. They need to know that there's something more after this world. I get pounded around by the skeptics on a regular basis. Like the Skeptical Inquirer, radio talk show hosts have had a field day with me. Years ago, radio talk show host Howard Stern had, he thought he was going to give me the ride of my life. He invited me on his show to talk about deathbed visions and ended up asking me what color my pubic hair was. That was rich. When I accepted the invitation to appear on his show, I knew what I was getting into, but, listen to this, I knew what I was getting into. I knew he was going to give me a hard time. The only reason I did his show was not to go to battle with him because I knew that would be pointless. I wanted to pass the message on to the closeted experiencer. They needed to hear from someone like me that there were others out there who were just like them. So, gang, save your breath, save your energy. Find somebody who needs to talk and be an open, compassionate, listening gear for them. Well, it's been a wild, wild, wild day. As I said before, if what's going on around the world is really getting to you, if it's really getting under your skin and you find yourself, if you find yourself becoming depressed, overreactive, if you find yourself giving up other tasks that need your attention in order to sit in front of the television, if you find yourself being triggered, if you are an abuse survivor and you find yourself having crying spells, becoming extremely overwhelmed, not eating or sleeping properly, stop watching the news. Stop reading the papers. Make a deal with yourself. Turn on the television for 15 minutes a day just to catch up on what's going on. But give yourself a break. Don't get lost in this stuff. Be aware of what's happening. But if you are becoming overwhelmed, do take care of yourself. Now, I have a real treat for you in 2 weeks. How many of you guys watch Ghost Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel? It comes on at 8 and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They're in their second season. It's a group of these guys. I think they're the Atlanta Paranormal Organization. They're a hoot. I mean, they really are a hoot. And they go into all of these houses and they, haul in all of this paranormal equipment and they go looking for haunted houses. Well, I'm going to have their research and developmental manager on in 2 weeks. So join me in 2 weeks as we talk with Dr. Ron Million, M-I-L-I-O-N-E. You can also go to the TAPS website, just plug in the Atlantic Paranormal Society.com. And we will ask him, I'm going to ask him a whole bunch of questions about the gadgets that he uses. So, as usual, it's always a pleasure being with you every other Thursday night at 9 o'clock Central Standard Time. It's time for me to go. It's starting to, the fireflies are coming out here, and I'm going to go sit in the backyard and take one last look at the mountain. We're getting ready to pack up and go back to Galveston in a day.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.